The Taijuvin Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 21. Striking Back. Gavriel reached out to move a piece on the chess set, then pulled his hand back. Across from him, Vlad grumbled something about needing to trim his beard between moves. The fool foreigner did not even begin to understand the complexity of the game. His moves were wild and made no sense. Not that he did not exploit a weakness Gavriel might have left open, but he seemed to do it almost accidentally. "This year, friend," Vlad said, "aren't there traditionally time limits on this game?" "I'm using the time you aren't," Gavriel said. "Shush. Maybe we should start taking a shot of vodka every time a piece is captured." Gavriel looked irritably to the side of the board, where only his own white pieces stood captured. "Would that mean you'd start losing pieces?" Vlad smiled and pulled out a flask, tipped it back, then offered it across the board. "I didn't say who would take the shot, did I?" Gavriel frowned and grabbed the flask, although he sat up and looked around. The common room was empty. The aviary did seem to miss mornings more often than not. Still, for all their loose attitudes at night, if Nikki saw him taking a drink this early, she'd box his ears. He did not even want to think of what Kira or Cook would do to him. He took a swig and looked back at the board without handing the flask back. There, perhaps, was the move he needed. He reached out to move a piece, and a door opened in the back of the hideout. Vlad groaned as he pulled his hand back and looked up. "Morning, Gavriel," Marcus said. "Didn't expect to see you up and about. Unless I miss my guess, the party lasted until near 4 in the morning." "Something like. I just never went to bed." He gestured to the cup of black tea sitting in front of him. Not until Marcus raised an eyebrow did Gavriel realize he had done it with the hand still holding Vlad's flask. "I can see," Marcus said. "Think you are clear enough in the head to talk a bit? Looks like you're having a hard time at the chessboard. I'd hate to distract you." "He has a hard time no matter what he's been doing," Vlad said. "I don't know why I keep agreeing to play him." "Bah," Gavriel pushed away from the board. "I can't even remember whose turn it is." Vlad held up a finger. "It's..." Gavriel did not give him a chance to finish. "What was it you wanted to talk about, Marcus?" Marcus sat down, glanced at the board, and moved one of Gavriel's pieces. "I need to know where the rebels are." Gavriel narrowed his eyes. "And why would you need to know that?" Brian walked into the room from the back hallway. "Because he wants revenge." Marcus looked back at Brian. "Not exactly." "Revenge?" Gavriel rubbed his chin. "You still harping that Lecter is that shock shield bastard?" Marcus turned back to him. "You don't think so?" "I didn't say that," Gavriel said. "Just that I'm not completely sold on it being him, either." "The pieces just add up," Brian said. "He's the one who sent us to Dunny Manor, likely as a setup for a field test of his device. He undoubtedly has dealings with Lord Shadow and could have found out we'd be in the thieves' race. He's interested in revenants, and he wears the High Meister's bracer and carries a shock rod. What more do you want?" "Some common sense, perhaps," Gavriel said. "Why wear a mask if he was just going to wear a bracer that names him outright?" "It would implicate Tesma as well," Marcus said. "In fact, people would probably assume it was him first." "All right, fine. Lecter's our man," Gavriel said. "So what do we do about it?" "That's more of a pickle, isn't it?" Brian said. "Even though we know where he will likely be, the rebellion is well enough financed that they surely have plenty of thugs in the building we haven't seen. And there is still the matter of the shock shield itself," Gavriel said, "and his other little toys. Sure, a wooden club can get through the shield, but it still seems like a weak offense against his shock rod and those little balls of his." "Don't worry about Lecter," Marcus said. "I'll handle him." "You got lucky in the Warrens," Brian said. "Don't count on that twice, Marcus." "I haven't pulled all of my tricks out yet either," Marcus said. "I wasn't just a spy in the war. I was an assassin. Just tell me where to find him." "You act like you're going to do this by yourself," Gavriel said. "Don't fall in love with that idea. That bastard killed Jack and has caused no end of grief to us. On some level, he's probably even responsible for the hole getting burned down. We want our piece, too." Vlad looked up from where he was still studying the board after Marcus's move. "Yes, quite. Rasputnik always pays his debts, and I have quite the bill with this fellow." Marcus sighed and looked at Brian. You coming too? I've had my fill of adventure, he said. They are right. This is whole business, not just yours. But I'm not as young and spry as I used to be. I'll work recon and help with the plan, but I'll leave the gunslinging to you. He's going to have to be expecting us, Gabriel said. He's only been flaunting who he is the whole time. The place is likely to be guarded pretty heavily. He also knows who we are, Brian said. We are thieves, not soldiers, and he is rather clever. If I were him, I'd actually leave a tempting covert path open and be ready to spring a trap. Then we go in the front door, Marcus said. I am a soldier, and Gabriel has enough weaponry to be several. A frontal assault, Vlad said. Crazy enough that it just might work. But it might be better with a few more bodies. Volunteering, Gabriel said. Heavens no, Vlad said. I don't even know how to use a gun. Marcus looked at him skeptically. You can blow a ship up without any planning, but you can't fire a gun? Vlad shrugged and went back to looking at the board. Never saw a reason to learn. It isn't hard, Marcus said. You just... I've tried, Marcus, Gabriel said. Oh, believe me, I've tried. Don't waste your breath. Still, that leaves us with two attackers and one lookout, Marcus said. Three lookouts if you count Margot and Gust. And three attackers. They all turned to see Kira walking into the main room. She looked remarkably better, despite a few light bruises and cuts that still decorated her face. Brian shook his head. Kira, don't even start with me, Brian, she said. I don't want to hear anything about my recent ordeal, or how it would be too dangerous. I'm a member of the whole, and I'm coming with. And unlike some people, I know how to use a gun just fine. To accent her point, she patted her holstered revolver. You still look beat halfway to hell, Gabriel said. I know you'd be good for it, girl, but seriously, I'm surprised you can stand. Amazing what a few shots of vodka and a night in a real bed can do for a person, she said. I wasn't treated all that bad down in the jail. Not nearly as bad as I know some of them can be. I'm coming with you on this, and you'll have to stick me back in a jail to stop me, which seems somewhat counterproductive. Gabriel looked around at the other men. Vlad was smiling, Brian was frowning, and Marcus was unreadable. He ran a hand over his scalp and sighed. Fine, but if I have to carry you out of there, you're not going to hear the end of it. Same goes for if I have to end up carrying you out, she said. Aha! Vlad reached forward and moved a piece on the board. What are you going to do now, brass man? Marcus glanced at the board and moved another piece. Checkmate. The smile slid off Vlad's face. Wait, no, but... Marcus looked at Brian. What I'm going to do now is strike back. Like Vlad, Lecter will have made a critical mistake that all of Syntat made during the war. Just because your opponent is hurt doesn't mean they are out. Sometimes, they come back even stronger than they ever were. Now come on, daylight's wasting. Roger flipped through the report as he walked into his office. There were some days he wished he could just burn all the paper, the consequences be damned. Some days, but not many, when he thought of the alternative, rooting around in the mud on the lines. He closed the folder and looked up, unsurprised to see the man sitting in a chair in front of his desk. Captain Hares, Douglas Titer said. I find myself once again in need of your unique talents. Roger looked the boy over. His face was puffy, and there was an unkemptness to his hair that belied the crisp lines of his suit. And there was something wrong with his face. They say real men wear their bruises with pride, Roger said, instead of hiding them with makeup and looking like popinjays. Douglas blanched and narrowed his eyes. Have you worn your bruises proudly where those who would scorn you for them could see? No, Roger said. I haven't had the occasion. Real men, I spoke of. I am a different sort of beast, Lord Titer. I am a cautious man. Cautious men do not receive those blue and black badges of merit to display, at least if we can help it. If you are calling yourself a coward, I think you are being harsh on yourself, Douglas said. A coward wouldn't have burned down a block of the slums without a second thought. Oh, I had second thoughts. Roger poured himself a drink and sat down behind his desk. Plenty, I assure you. Burning down the slums was the best way to cover my tracks, though. Extreme, perhaps, but effective. A braver man would have trusted the ineptitude of the constables. They would have no reason to follow you if you had only kidnapped my sister, Douglas said. Why start the fire to hide from them? Because it was not them I was hiding from, Roger said. I was hiding from everyone else. From your sister's friends. From other people that might be interested in her or her friends. From people I couldn't even begin to imagine would be interested. I hide with pride, Lord Tider, and I do what I can to not stick my neck out. Unless the pay is right, Douglas said. That is what it comes down to in the end, isn't it? Roger twisted his lips into a thin smile. They say every man has a price. One who claims he does not merely has not been offered enough money yet. Douglas reached into his coat pocket, wincing as he did, and pulled out a thick envelope. I need you to reacquire my sister. Roger made no motion to take the envelope. And how, might I ask, did you lose her? The jail I was keeping her in was raided by her friends, Douglas said. In addition to reacquiring her, kill her friends, if you would be so kind. Roger leaned back and sipped his drink. I'm afraid this is not the kind of work I deal in, Lord Tider. You want more? Douglas said. I've already doubled the fee from last time in this envelope. That should cover the killings. Not that you didn't obviously try that last time. This time, make sure of it. Roger shook his head. You misunderstand me. It doesn't matter how much money you offer a blacksmith. He's not going to be able to sew you a dress. Douglas set the envelope down on the desk and folded his hands. Nothing has changed. You need to discreetly raid a thief's den, steal her back, and dispose of the witnesses. Plenty has changed, Roger said. My contact to her gang does not trust me anymore. They have moved dens. And, as I'll say for a third time, this is not the line of work I engage in. Douglas stood up and sneered. You will engage in it, Captain Harris. Do not think you are so high that you can ignore me. Your father may sit on the council, but you are still a commoner. Anything you could implicate me in would be swept under the rug by my father, and in the process you would be swept with it. Now take your blasted money and find my sister. Roger looked up at the fuming boy and laughed. Douglas's face grew red, although the makeup made the blush uneven, and Roger laughed more. What is so damn funny? Answer me, peasant! Roger set his glass down and pinched the bridge of his nose. After a moment, he was in control of himself. Tell me, Lord Tider, how long did you wait in my office for me? Douglas furrowed his brow at the question. What? How long did you sit here, waiting, after Sergeant Frezen showed you in? Douglas balled a fist but instantly loosened his hand as he winced. What does that have to do with anything? I knew you were here before Frezen even showed you back, Roger said. And you left me waiting? Douglas said. I sat in here for nearly an hour. Yes, Roger said. Because, as I said, I am not a brave man, Lord Tider. I am a cautious one, and I knew why you were here. Yesterday, I had two people inexplicably come asking after your sister. Odd people. One, a certain Meister, and the other, a bastard in a mask. Douglas's eyes were wide, and he finally sat back down. And that could ignore bullets. I don't know about bullets, Roger said. But yes, masked, and with a shock rod besides. Why these people were interested in your sister, I don't know, but I really don't care. But I have realized there are prices a man can be paid that are not money. I deal in information, Lord Tider, nothing more. I still don't understand about the weight. Roger shook his head. I'm guessing someone hit you rather hard on the head. Or perhaps you have always been slow and I just ignored that when you threw all that money at me. It is simply this, Lord Tider. I was plying my trade. I was selling information. On that cue, a concealed door opened up at the back of the room, behind Roger. He did not turn around, but the look on Douglas's face told him exactly who was standing there. Lord Tider, Roger said. I trust you have heard enough? Plenty, Robert Tider said. Douglas stood up again. Father, I... Sit back down, you worthless slug, Robert said. And here I thought you were starting to turn out to be a competent heir. Perhaps I should have let you run off to the streets, too.
Wait, Douglas said. You mean you knew?
Knew that you kidnapped your sister? Robert frowned and walked over to loom down on his son. No, you managed to hide that from me rather well. Or perhaps it was Walden. I swear, if he wasn't dead, I'd kill him myself for that. But I did know where she was. Do you think my own daughter could run away and hide right under my nose without me finding her? I've known she turned into a sewer rat not even a month after she left. And good riddance, I say. She was weak, and would not have even been fit to marry off to improve the family position.
But you told everyone she died, Douglas said, in the country.
And you about ruined that now, didn't you? Robert backhanded Douglas, bringing a scream out of the boy. I had the sympathy of the city, still do in some circles. And how would it have looked if she suddenly came back from the dead when I'd professed to everyone of having seen her thrown down a ravine by her startled horse? She was always of more use to me dead than alive. If you wanted to truly do our family a favor, you would have seen her dead in truth.
Why not kill her back?
Robert backhanded Douglas again. Don't presume to question me, boy.
Roger watched and kept his face neutral. He knew the answer, of course. House Tider had not been as wealthy and influential as it was today back when it lost its eldest daughter to her tragic accident. Simply put, Robert had not been able to afford to see her taken care of, and likely by the time he could, she was so deep to ground that he could not find her, probably under Brian's wing. But that was information that no one had paid for, especially a presumptuous whelp being beat on by his father. So Roger kept his mouth shut and his eyes and ears open. Robert turned to him. Keep whatever he was offering you for this job. I trust that will cover payment for telling me about this.
I think it will cover it, Roger said. As always, Lord Tider, thank you.
Don't be so smug, Robert said. I have a mind to see you knock down a peg or two as well for dealing with my brat and keeping it behind my back in the first place.
You did offer me a rather large sum of your money, Roger said, which, I will remind you, I returned to you.
And that is why I'm not going to turn you into the tribunals, Robert said. Then I'd have a hard time replacing you. A hard time, mind, but not an impossible one. If anyone else from my house tries to contact you, you come to me, understand?
Quite, Roger said. Robert nodded and hauled a whimpering Douglas up and pushed him forward.
Pull yourself together, you twit. I have a carriage waiting outside, but I won't have you sullying our good name even where only base-born soldiers will see us.
They left, and Roger reached over, picked up the envelope, and opened it. True to his word, Douglas had doubled the amount. It was worth having given Robert the first fee as a gesture of good faith. Not, of course, that Roger would actually rat out anyone from House Tider that came for information. No, that was business as usual, but the first one that wanted more would have their name on a note to Lord Tider before they left the building. That was the way of information. You respect the rules, and no one gets hurt. No city blocks get burned down, and no maniacs in masks jump you in a dark basement and nearly kill you. Roger finished his drink before returning to his paperwork. Yes, all was right with the world again. Gabriel put a handful of seeds into his mouth and sucked on them while he waited. Across the alley, Marcus paced and constantly checked his pocket watch, as though Vlad's distractions could ever be missed.
Calm down, Gabriel said. What happens, happens.
I was a soldier, Gabriel, Marcus said. You think I don't know that?
If I was to judge from how you're standing,
Gabriel shrugged and spat a seed out. Marcus snapped the watch shut and shoved it into his coat. I've been in plenty of battles, and infiltrated enemy camps more than I'd care to count. Each time, I was nervous, and every soldier I ever talked to was nervous too. How can you be so calm? This man killed Jack.
Yeah, he did, Gabriel said, and I'm looking forward plenty to getting that revenge. But it will come when it comes. Until then, relax. You'll use up all your steam worrying about like that.
Marcus glowered, but at least he stopped his pacing. That was getting annoying.
Seriously, soldiers worried before every single battle? That seemed a bit much to Gabriel. But then again, he did not go into a place all that often expecting to be shot at. No, he much preferred to be the one doing the shooting, and with any luck, today would be just that. It was, of course, a Saltine plan to the bone. Distraction, misdirection, and stealth, even for the nearly warlike nature of it. Vlad, Kira, and Gust would cause a ruckus in the front, even making it seem like they were truly planning to come right in the front door and kill. Meanwhile, Marcus and Gabriel would slip in through the back and intercept Lecter, who would most likely be trying to flee, along with any other leadership that was in the building. It had taken a bit to convince Marcus that he would be better off in the back, and that actually going in the front with guns blazing would be counterproductive at best. "It's funny," Gabriel said. "My mother used to tell me stories of brave generals and kings who would fight right on the front lines, where it was the hottest. Reality is such a shameful difference. They seem to be the first to run the second it looks bad. And how exactly are they supposed to be generals and kings if they are busy fighting?" Marcus shrugged out of his coat and laid it neatly across a barrel. "The second they draw a gun, they stop leading and are no better than a common soldier." Gabriel stared at Marcus, not quite hearing the last part. Under his coat, Marcus was wearing strange clothes that revealed most of his metal parts, even to the point of his now short pants that stopped just above his knees, having panels cut out of them to give access to the compartments on his thighs. "Trona above," Gabriel said. "It isn't even the first time I've seen all of it, but it still shocks me." Marcus knelt and felt along his legs with his eyes closed. "You know, sometimes even I forget. Even with the constant feeling of something pulling at the back of my head, with the constant different feeling in my legs and arm. Sometimes, if I close my eyes, I am whole again." He stood. "Little good it does me." They stood in silence for several minutes, then Marcus reached for his watch. Before he had it completely out of his pocket, an explosion shook the entire block. The sound of bricks crumbling and falling came from the street. Marcus paused and looked down the alley. Did he actually blow part of the building up? Gabriel spat the last seed out and drew a gun. "He blew a boat up the last time I needed a quick distraction. I wouldn't put it past him. Come on." Marcus turned to the door and emotion drained from his face. He tried the handle, which was of course locked, so Gabriel stepped back to give him room to pick it. Instead of manipulating the lever on the back of his hand, though, Marcus simply took a step back, planting a foot behind him, and kicked the door in. Wood splintered and went flying, and what was left of the door hung limply from a single hinge. Gabriel frowned as Marcus walked in without even drawing his gun. So much for the stealth. Inside, people were already in the halls, looking towards the street where it still sounded like the building was mid-collapse. But a few had turned at the sudden entrance Marcus had favored. Those that turned screamed, and soon all of the eyes were on the revenant that had appeared seemingly from nowhere. Most of the people ran, either back behind doors or towards the sound of the collapsing building. One, though, drew a gun. Gabriel leveled his own weapon, but Marcus was faster. Instead of reaching for his gun, the revenant stooped back down, and a compartment that Gabriel had not even realized was there opened in the man's lower leg. A sort of disc with sharpened blades popped out into his hand, and as he was standing back up, he threw it with a sharp flick of his wrist. The blades spun blindingly fast and whizzed through the air, and then they were buried in the man's neck. At least, they were buried until the man's head fell backwards, connected only by the thinnest bit of sinew and bone. Marcus stepped over the man as if he were a piece of overturned furniture, stooping mid-step just long enough to pull the bladed disc free. Gabriel grit his teeth and hurried after Marcus, keeping an eye out behind for other possible attackers that might have thought to hide until they were past, then surprise them. Marcus paid no mind to Gabriel, and instead started to kick doors in without even trying them to see if they were locked. People screamed, and he gave most of the apartments only a cursory glance. Brian had told him what to look for, what kinds of things would likely mark a room the rebellion used. Those he searched more thoroughly. By the seventh door, Marcus had killed three more men, all of which had been hiding in rebellion apartments, and the building had stopped shaking and only now groaned as though it was about to fall down. Gabriel could hear some of a firefight outside, and he gave a small prayer to Trona that the others managed only to distract and not get fully drawn in. For Gabriel's part, he had not fired a round yet. Marcus was too fast with that disc. When Marcus kicked in the seventh door, he stumbled back as a small, knobby ball flew out towards him. It brushed his metal arm, and everything turned blue for a moment. When Gabriel could see again, Marcus was on one knee, groaning. Gabriel did not pause to think. He rushed Marcus and pushed him to the side while firing several rounds into the dark room. Wood splintered from the bullets, but nothing else. After a moment, Gabriel's eyes adjusted and he could see the room was empty. He started to get up, and Marcus pushed him off. "He's here." Gabriel grunted, and by the time he was back on his feet, Marcus was already running into the room. Gabriel took the time to turn up the lamps via a knob by the door, and sure enough, Tesma's lights came to life. He rushed after Marcus just in time to see him throw the disc. Lecter stood on the far side of a room by a closed door, the key forgotten in the lock, and he drew his shock rod in a fluid motion. Somehow, he hit the disc as it spun at him, and blue light flashed as the disc deflected and buried itself into the wall. Gabriel leveled his gun, but Marcus pushed it down. "Here I am, Lecter," Marcus said. "The revenant you so desperately want come to you. You have hunted me for so long. Why flee now?" Lecter shifted his balance and kept the shock rod up. "I don't know what you are talking about, monster." "No shock shield today, Lecter?" Marcus said. "Don't tell me I've caught you unawares. Or was it damaged somehow in the jail, and that is why you ran away?" "Shock shield?" Lecter frowned but kept his guard up. "You think I'm the man with the shock shield? I'm flattered, but I'm also afraid that you're quite mistaken." Marcus drew Brian's dueling cane out of the makeshift sheath they had made for it and rushed the Meister. Gabriel had his gun back up as soon as Marcus moved, but he was too fast, and he belted down blows so quickly that it was all Lecter could do to parry them. There was no grace to the fight. Gabriel had seen fencers, back when they did the Treslin Gardens job, and he had seen what skilled blade work was. This was not it. Blow after blow, Marcus brought the cane around with such speed and force that it would surely cave Lecter's skull in if it made contact. And then the cane cracked. The top half went spinning through the air, and Lecter's parry went high. To his credit, the Meister saw his opportunity and started to twist the motion into an attack, but Marcus was nonplussed. He merely dropped the broken stump and extended his arm, grabbing Lecter by the collar. A moment later, the man was flying through the air, shock rod spinning out of his hand. It landed in a corner, and he landed on a table, shattering it. Marcus walked up to him and held his arm out. A blade the length of his forearm whipped out in an arc, slashed Lecter in the arm, and stopped just short of the man's neck. Marcus stood there, poised, as Lecter stared up at him. Gabriel took the chance to look the Meister over. "You killed our friend," Marcus said, "and you have made it clear that you will continue to antagonize me. I do not relish killing, but I think, perhaps, I shall enjoy this one death, this justice in a city that has forgotten what such a thing even is." "It's not him," Gabriel said. Marcus stood still for a long moment. "What?" "Look at his wrist, Marcus." Lecter was wearing his sleeves rolled up, as though he had perhaps been tinkering at a workbench before they had blown half of his hideout away. His left wrist was covered by his Meister's bracer, but the right one was bare. "What about it?" Marcus said. "There's no bruise." "So?" Gabriel pointed. "There is no bruise. I hit that bastard hard enough, I'd be surprised if I didn't break a bone. There should at least be some sort of sign of it. His wrist is fine." Marcus looked at the wrist again, and then he took a step back, lowering the blade. "You aren't him." Lecter slumped in the wreckage. "I believe I already said that." Marcus took another step back and looked down at the shock rod. He then turned around and left the room. Gabriel kept his gun trained on Lecter, but glanced back over his shoulder. "Where are you going?" "Home," Marcus said. "We're done here." Gabriel frowned. Lecter only looked at him, his face amazingly calm for having been almost killed by a revenant and having his base of operation torn to shambles. Gabriel walked out slowly, keeping his gun on Lecter the entire time, and then bolted after Marcus as soon as the Meister was out of sight. Marcus sat in the pew and took a deep breath. He did not have to sit long before Father Morgan sat down next to him. What happened, my son?
I killed, Marcus said.
Morgan nodded.
Why?
I thought they were the ones to kill my friend, Marcus said.
I was sure of it.
But they weren't.
No. Marcus put his head in his hands, which were now properly covered by long sleeves and gloves.
They weren't. He wasn't.
The first few were in the heat of a battle. It was them or me, but him. I almost killed in cold blood.
Trona above, Morgan, I wanted to.
But you didn't, Morgan said. You stopped yourself. That is what is important.
I didn't stop myself, Marcus said. I was stopped. I was about to kill without even making sure.
Who stopped you?
Marcus laughed despite himself.
A man who has killed in cold blood more times than I care to count.
You have survived this test, Marcus, Morgan said, at least with some semblance of your humanity.
That is a start.
I have not passed it yet, Marcus said. He's still out there, and I still have to deal with him.
Morgan furrowed his brow.
Who?
Marcus lifted his head and looked up to the altar.
Tesma.